sung to yourself a little song. More than likely, what you did was start with L. You sang L-M-N-O-P, and then backed up to O once you heard the letter P. You might also have started at H and sung H-I-J-K-L-M-N-O-P. Some folks may have started at A and gone quickly. Is this just a leftover from our grade school days when teachers had us sing things to keep us entertained? Not exactly. Singing the alphabet is an effective way of dividing an intimidating sequence of items into manageable sections and then encoding those sections for quick access. Notice that the alphabet song divides the letters up into chunks of around 7. Even the H-I-J section requires L-M-N-O to be said like one item, keeping the bits of information at about 7. This is probably no coincidence. Psychologists have found that 7 is the number of items we can comfortably store in our memory. After that, we tend to need a cue to help us out. Singing provides that cue. After 7 items, you sing the next group in a different pitch, and the pitches are connected to each other by means of an ongoing melody. Random pitches probably wouldn't work. Thus, the old grade school trick of singing the alphabet is not childish at all. In fact, it shows us rather clearly how the human mind works, be it young or old. This moment of science comes from Indiana University. Today's program was prepared by William Orem, with help from Richard Schifrin in Psychological and Brain Sciences. For a moment of science, I'm Don Glass.
In sports news this afternoon, the NFL is asking federal court to vacate a judge's ruling allowing suspended quarterback Michael Vick to keep $16.5 million in bonuses. The NFL also wants to disqualify U.S. District Judge David Doty, who ruled earlier this month that the Atlanta Falcons would violate the NFL collective bargaining agreement if it tried to recover the roster bonus Vick already received. The league argues that Doty's public comments show he is biased against them. Vick is serving a 23-month prison sentence after pleading guilty to federal charges in a dogfighting operation. After the plea, the Falcons tried to recover about $20 million in bonuses Vick earned from 2004 to 2007. Florida State has placed its sports teams on probation for 2 years because of an academic cheating scandal. A report released by the school says about 60 student athletes have or will suffer some loss of eligibility. Two staffers have been fired. The University of Illinois women's basketball team is in Madison. Take on the Badgers tonight, tip-off 7 p.m. The Chicago Bulls face off tonight against a Miami Heat team that's lost 23 of its last 25 games. The Heat come into the United Center with a 9-41 record, while injury-plagued Chicago is 20-31. The St. Louis Blues are on the road tonight to take on the Colorado Avalanche, and 8 of the top 10 golfers in the world are in the field for this week's PGA event at Riviera Country Club in Los Angeles. Tiger Woods and Ernie Els are the only ones to skip the Northern Trust Open. That's sports.
Today's programming is made possible in part by 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign, offering ground and whole bean coffee purchased from farmers using internationally recognized fair trade standards.
People who choose to live in historic houses tend to appreciate old-world charm, but that charm often comes at the expense of energy efficiency. Old windows and doors let in cold drafts and leak out warm air. As a result, homeowners are often forced to balance their interests in historical integrity and aesthetics against their environmental principles. The Environment Report's Diane Richard reports.
My neighbor James Boyd Brent had me over to his house the other day. He lives in a beautiful farmhouse that's about 130 years old. It's got tall ceilings, rickety staircases, original windows, floors, and doors. But what makes it cool also makes it cold. Really cold. James recently had an energy audit done. Today he's showing me all the problems he needs to fix. He greets me at the door wearing a knit hat. And even though he's lanky, he looks a bit padded.
I got a vest, you know, like a t-shirt, a shirt, a very thick shirt, actually, and then a sweater and another sweater. So this is 4 layers.
That's because it's really cold inside. James is a professor of design at the University of Minnesota. He has a taste for beautiful old things, but that puts him in a bind. Does he sacrifice what he loves about his old home to improve his green cred, or does he simply live with the howling gales blowing down his hallways? It's a dilemma he confronts every winter, preserving aesthetics versus conserving energy. He says it's not a strict either-or, and he's willing to install modern conveniences when it makes sense.
I'm not interested in being faithful to some sort of bourgeois idea about what history is.
To prove it, he shows me the ultra-high-efficiency furnace and water heater he recently installed in his basement. But I notice something else down here.
I see light coming through there.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's daylight. I mean, there's not even a window. There's nothing. There's just a hole.
Upstairs, it's bad enough. James's house rarely tops 60 degrees. Down here, though, I can see my breath.
Last year, you know, it froze down here. Rolex's cat water froze solid. I saw her once sort of tapping it with her paw with a look of sort of irritation.
We leave the basement and its gaping hole for another day. Today's chores start in the kitchen.
Okay, well, I'm going to, first of all, go in here. I'm working on this door here. As you can see, you know, I've sort of sealed this all around in layers, actually. But I've just decided it's not enough. Still letting air, great, you know, currents of cold air coming through. So I'm going to, I'm actually just going to seal the whole thing right on the outside here. Yeah, I'm just sticking that down a bit more strongly at the bottom. Because actually that's where all the cold air is coming through.
The energy audit helped James figure out where he was losing the most heat. Windows, doors, baseboards, walls, and attic all are culprits.
The basic thing is, you know, that's what came out of the energy audit, that all of this sort of stuff that I'm doing now is basically the sign of a complete loser.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean in the sense that, you know, it's just taking up all my time, and it's, you know, it's like I might as well live in a shack.
James is not alone. Lots of people are in the same fix, loving their beautiful old home, hating that it's as drafty as a barn. I talked to Paul Marin about James's frustration. Paul is a home energy expert. He says the taping sheets of plastic over old doors and windows should pay off.
That really reduces the amount of air infiltration and also adds another insulating layer. So that's very effective.
Paul says that there's lots more James can do, but taping up things is cheap and easy. Now, James is not exactly looking forward to pulling down all that film next spring, but he's willing to do it because it's the one way he can balance his appreciation for the past and his commitment to the future.
I mean, obviously, I could heat this house just by cranking up the furnace and not worrying, but it would cost literally thousands of dollars a quarter, you know. And also, it's just a complete waste of energy. You know, I do actually have a sort of sense of the connection between wasting money and also wasting energy and wasting resources and being wasteful.
So, like a lot of people who love their old homes, James's weekends will be spent sealing up his house. It's that, or spend a lot of money on expensive upgrades, or wasting money on heat that escapes through the drafty doors and windows, and that big hole in the basement. For the Environment Report, I'm Diane Richard.
Renovation efforts often go nowhere because of the cost. In Washington, D.C., some private investors are putting up $500 million to help pay for dozens of green overhauls. Danielle Carson has more.
The Meridian International Center in Washington, D.C. is a building with a pedigree. It was designed by John Russell Pope, whose legacy also includes the National Gallery of Art and the Jefferson Memorial. But beauty aside, it's not what you would call energy efficient.
It's important that we not only preserve these buildings, they're national treasures, but we also make sure that they are improved and that they are preserved for the future. So this is part of our overall preservation effort as well.
That's Meridian's president, Stuart Holliday. He says the renovations are happening because of something called the Energy Efficiency Partnership. It's one of the few initiatives in the country that will pay the upfront expenses of making the buildings more energy efficient. Meridian is one of the first buildings to sign on to the retrofit project.
You've got an entranceway where you're going to have heat loss or cooling loss during the seasons, and you've got high ceilings, you've got a challenge getting circulation into this area. Here, where airflow is lost through the doorway, and if there's anything we can do there to improve that so that you don't have the losses when people are coming and going.
Patrick Sweeney is an energy auditor with Pepco, a local power company. His first job is to determine where energy is being wasted. The tour of Meridian Center began at the bottom, walking carefully down a narrow stairwell, typical of these older buildings, to the boiler room.
We're exploring whether or not there's any way to connect the two buildings from a heating standpoint. That would obviously give us some savings. Rather than running two systems, you may only need to run one.
Project officials hope other building owners will follow Meridian's example. Their goal is to sign on 100 properties over the next 5 years. Jeffrey Eckel is the CEO of the investment group that's putting up the capital. He says a lot of property owners understand that energy-efficient buildings are more marketable.
A lot of building occupants are now asking, almost as a threshold level, is this building green? People expect marble in the foyer for a Class A office space. They also expect an energy-efficient green building for Class A office space.
Eckel's firm, Hannon Armstrong, will provide money for the renovations, which can run into hundreds of thousands of dollars. Building owners are expected to repay the loans with interest out of the money they save in utility costs. Once the upgrades at Meridian are done, energy auditor Pat Sweeney says the center could save up to $50,000 a year in utility costs. Eckel says climate change may be a global problem, but the solutions are local. With green technologies growing more popular, he expects to see similar deals attract investors across the country.
It's a big problem to reduce carbon emissions in the U.S., and it takes a lot of fairly small investments to do that. The attitudes have changed in this country so much in the last 6 to 12 months. There's no question that capital is very attracted to green investments these days.
Two similar proposals were unveiled last year, one in Cambridge, Massachusetts, called Clean Energy Solutions, and former President Bill Clinton's climate initiative calls for making upgrades to municipal buildings in more than a dozen cities around the world. Producing electricity is expensive, so as long as energy costs remain high, property owners will look for ways to save money on utility bills. With projects like the Energy Efficiency Partnership, officials say building owners will get the help from outside investors who, in turn, are finding there's money to be made on making buildings more energy efficient. For NPR News, I'm Danielle Carson in Washington.
When you buy new tires for your car, you're charged a fee to properly dispose of the old tires. But too often, correct tire disposal does not occur. The tires end up being abandoned in vacant lots or thrown into a remote ditch. Zach Rosen reports on a group that is picking up those tires, making something useful, and helping people.
See, if you can notice, it don't take much to find tires around here. You don't have to go far.
Mike Mason is driving me around in a big white truck looking for thrown out tires, and we found some. A pretty big pile of old tires.
And see here, you see how they dump them around abandoned buildings?
Who do you think dumped these?
Somebody went somewhere and picked up some tires from a tire shop, and they paid them to get rid of them. Instead of them taking them somewhere, they dump them right here.
Abandoned tires are a problem in a lot of cities, and that's the case here on the west side of Detroit. The tire piles are a fire hazard. They're breeding grounds for mosquitoes. They're an environmental disaster. Mason loads a dozen or so tires into the back of the truck. He's taking them to a factory where workers take these problem tires and turn them into something useful. One large room of this multi-purpose factory is used to shred the formerly discarded tires into thick rubber strips. The strips are then hole punched, fixed together with three metal rods, and designed with colorful plastic beads. The end result is a custom-made doormat made out of recycled tires. This whole venture started when Reverend Faith Fowler came across a magazine article about a Native American tribe making doormats out of old car tires in Oklahoma. She thought, heck, we should be doing this in Detroit.
And it intrigued me because of the number of vacant lots here in the city and the fact that we're dealing with the illegal dumping. We knew we had a bunch of men and women who have been homeless and are having a hard time finding work right now.
Reverend Fowler is the executive director of Cass Community Social Services. That's a center for homeless people and people with addictions. And now, she's heading up the new doormat-making business. The people who work here actually live across the street or at another one of Cass's housing programs around the city. Fowler says she's really into this new business model because of all the problems it fights. Unemployment, vacant lots, and illegal dumping.
We set it up as a training program so that for 3 months they work for just 4 hours a day learning sort of the business, if you will. And then at the end of that training time, they can either decide they want to work here or they can take a reference from us to work somewhere else.
This really is a small-scale operation. There are 4 part-time and 3 full-time employees here, making about 25 mats a day.
I don't know if that sounds like a lot or a little.
That's Stacy Lee. She's in charge of supervising the doormat operation. She says the whole point of this business is to work in a place that's not very high stress. There are no quotas here, and all the employees get paid the same thing, no matter how many mats they make in a day.
It's not all about production and bottom line. For us, the bottom line is human beings, so that's where our focus is.
And some of the people making the doormats say the approach makes the difference for them. Before starting work at Cass Community Social Services recently, Devel Davis was having a really hard time finding a job.
I would have jumped on any job I could that was offered to me, but it's just my mental state. When I do work, I let that bother me, and I feel but it's part of the illness, schizophrenia. And basically, when this came along, I was very happy, you know, knowing that I can work and not have any distractions to where it will make me not want to work. So I like it here.
Now, no one is making a lot of money by any means, but Reverend Faith Fowler says it's making a difference for the people and for the environment. More than 1,000 mats have now been made. That means more than 2,000 discarded tires that were illegally dumped are now welcoming people into their homes. For the Environment Report, I'm Zach Rosen.
The Environment Report is a production of Michigan Radio. Support comes from the Joyce Foundation, the George Gund Foundation, and USDA's Cooperative Extension Service. Have something to say about the Environment Report? Send email to feedback@environmentreport.org.
Earth and sky.
Scientists have discovered a parasite that disguises an ant as a fruit. When nematodes, microscopic parasites, infect a gliding ant, they turn the end of the ant's abdomen bright red so that it looks like a juicy berry. Earth and Sky's Lindsay Patterson spoke to Steve Yanoviak, a tropical insect ecologist. Lindsay, what's the story here?
The nematodes have managed to trick birds into eating their hosts, and this helps them spread to new ant colonies. Normally, birds don't eat these ants. They're spiny, with hard exoskeletons, and they smell and taste bad.
But birds might eat this ant if it looks like something they would eat.
Right, and here's how it works. The nematodes' eggs are found in bird feces. Gliding ants collect the feces to feed to their larvae. The parasite hatches inside the baby ants. So these ants are fated to grow up looking like red berries. They become sluggish and disoriented, easy prey for birds.
Just what the nematodes want, correct?
Yanoviak isn't quite sure yet how the nematodes do it, but he's sure that they don't know how clever their trick is. He said it's just a good example of natural selection and how parasites can manipulate their hosts to their advantage.
Thanks, Lindsay. I'm Deborah Bird with Lindsay Patterson, and we're Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
WILL programming is made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, featuring locally grown and organic produce, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar, and bulk foods department. Strawberry Fields also offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, pet foods, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. We're online at will.illinois.edu. We're getting ready to make way for the world. That's coming up next here on the Information Advantage. Mike Solo's forecast for tonight for Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy with a chance of some light rain this evening and a chance for a few snow showers overnight. The low tonight, 23. The wind from the west at 12 to 24 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy and colder with a few flurries possible during the morning. The high, 25. The wind from the northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, Friday night, clear and cold. The low, 7. The outlook for Saturday, sunny with a high of 33. It is 39 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois at 3 o'clock. Up next, it's The World from PRI. Don't go away.